Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 346. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowissogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun episode for you this week. We must get started with our guest. Catherine Hamm is a wedding innovator, an author, an education expert, and so much more. She is the president of GayWeddings.com, the leading online boutique and resource dedicated to serving same-sex couples. Since its founding in 1999, GayWeddings.com has supported thousands and thousands of same-sex couples and LGBT-friendly vendors, which we're going to talk about how important those vendors are. And Catherine has shared her expert perspective with media outlets such as the New York Times, The Washington Post, The Associated Press, Reuters, BuzzFeed, MSNBC, CNN. I could just keep going all day, Catherine. We won't have any time to chat. Catherine is also an education expert for Wedding Wire, and she is the co-author of the groundbreaking book, The New Art of Capturing Love, The Essential Guide to Lesbian Gay Wedding Photography. She really is one of my favorite people out there, and now she's here back with us. Catherine, welcome back to The Show Is So Gay.
Thank you, Ken. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
It has been almost 3 years, Catherine.
No.
I swear.
Really?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure you and I both look younger, too.
It's amazing how that works out for us, isn't it?
I love podcasts and radio.
My mom often reminds me that I have a face made for radio. It's very sweet. It's very sweet.
So uplifting.
We have so much ground to cover, Catherine. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Now, we have to do a little Catherine Hamm, This Is Your Life. From what I'm seeing, a background in education before we got into all this wedding craziness.
Right, right. I was just saying to my wife yesterday how I realized in my life I've really rarely ever been to just check a box that explains, you know, one of those standard forms about what I do. But I would say the one thing that has consistently been true is that I've been an educator. So I had actually come out of college, I had an internship and then a brief job in ad sales, marketing, and promotion for it was originally Discovery Channel before it grew to be Discovery Communications as it is today. And I decided I wanted something more, and so I found my way via coaching soccer into working in schools and working with middle and high school kids, and I was doing so through the counseling department, and that led me to go get a master's in social work, and then had a point where I was pretty worn out. It's a high burnout profession.
Yeah.
And was trying to figure out, you know, what next? And my mom, who had started the company back in 99, needed a little extra support. And, you know, it's really been a perfect combination of skills where there's this entrepreneurial component, this social justice component. I have a background in this sort of marketing, and I certainly don't mind sales. I'm not sure if that's a bad thing to say.
I never have someone who says it, so it's fantastic.
You know, right? So I'm comfortable with it.
Nice.
It means I have to make all the calls when we're ordering, you know, takeout. But anyway, I found my way into this and have become kind of an educator in the LGBT market, as you mentioned, through the book and through my work with professionals in the wedding space. And it's really been a joy. So I feel very blessed to have been able to just sort of follow what felt right, and that it's been a really nice match for me.
Well, I normally don't like telling tales out of school with people who aren't here, but let's talk about your mom a little bit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What pushed her to start all this?
You know, she has just always been someone who really is one of those visionary types. You know, you meet them and you know them because they just have lots of ideas in life. And my mom is an incredible advocate and ally and a real champion for people. I mean, I know I experienced that with her as my mom growing up as a kid that didn't exactly march to the same drummer as everyone else, i.e. young girls in Dallas, Texas. My tomboy self, it was not a great match all the time. And, you know, she basically was very excited when my wife and I announced that we were going to have a wedding back in, again, the late 90s. And she had this very interesting process in recognizing how difficult it was for us and that there were so many folks in our community looking for services and support. And she was saying as much, and at this wedding shower some friends threw for us, which was in the first dot-com boom. So, you know, every sentence we completed was with the phrase dot-com.
Right.
And so someone said, well, why don't you start twobrides.com? And she said, I will. So that's really where she began, with twobrides.com and twogrooms.com, which were online boutiques offering products for same-sex couples. And then just after I joined her full-time in 2005, we had met the founder of Casey David of Gay Weddings. He owned the domain. And we just had a lot of synergy and like-minded vision, and the result was that we acquired GayWeddings.com, rebranded, and built out to offer even more services and resources in a time that the blogosphere was expanding and the sort of second wave of understanding online reality was happening.
I feel like you very quickly threw in there the phrase, when I joined her in 2005. I feel like there had to be quite a bit that went into that. Now, I want to be very clear. Yeah. I adore my mother. She is my favorite person on this planet. I think she's a visionary, greatest lady ever. I'm not sure that I would jump into working with her. Was there any hesitation there?
You know, I don't think at that point I was really thinking about it as, you know, what does it mean to work with a family member?
Yeah.
I grew up with my dad, went into business with his dad and took over the business. And so there is some way that is kind of a natural narrative in our family. And, you know, frankly, I wanted to help her. And on top of it, it's an inspirational story.
Yeah.
I know back in the day she would tell me these stories about talking to couples and trying to help them with invitations. And they would get, you know, through the conversation. And by the end, they were essentially sending her an invitation to come to the ceremony. Because back then, as you know, so again, this is like in the early years, 99, early 2000s, it was a very different world for us. And
right.
So to have a parent sort of serving as the surrogate or symbol parent, enthusiastically embracing the union, was this incredible thing. So I was certainly, I just loved everything that she was doing. It was meaningful for me. It was meaningful for our community. And I wanted to help make it happen. So, you know, we in some ways are a great match for each other because we have very different personalities. And offsetting skills, but also, you know, there were days that it would be difficult. We might disagree on something and figure out how to get through. But in the end, you know, what we both have always been united around is making a difference, having marriage equality come to certainly our lives here in the U.S. and, US and hopefully abroad. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things that when push comes to shove, it's very easy to get to the point of what really matters the most here.
I would like to again remind my listeners and possibly my mother listening, I do love my mother in any and all contexts. I just worry that if there were a disagreement, she kind of can trump me in the disagreement because, you know, she's my mom.
Well, one of our favorite stories was we have different style tastes, and I'm just going to be honest. Like, I would put my money on her over myself, but she would find these products for the shop and bring them in. Notably, there were a couple of Victorian cake tops of brides, and then this one, I don't know how to describe it, it was sort of a large plastic solitaire ring, and I was like, you know, Mom, this is ridiculous. People aren't going to buy this stuff, and wouldn't you know it, the one thing especially that went gangbusters was that really fun solitaire ring. People were using them as like napkin holders and for like fun, campy engagement moments. She brought some really great skills, and I lost a few arguments based on sales.
Yeah. Mom, I don't agree with this choice. Really, Catherine? Because I birthed you, so I don't know if that really works there.
Right. Well, we still have a good time where we'll have a disagreement about something, and we'll reference like, oh, right, remember those cake toppers?
And the labor pains. So all of those things. When you were last on the show many, many years ago, you and Thea Dodds had just come out with this book. It really was right at the start, right when it was released,
right.
The New Art of Capturing Love. Talk to me about how that book was received, because we didn't know at that point, because it had just started.
Right. Well, first I have to say we did a number of interviews of all sorts, and Thea and I both agreed, and we knew at the minute we ended our interview with you, we had such a good time, and we still talk about what a fun time we had on the show Is So Gay. So thank you for that. Yeah, we had, you know, it's been such an amazing ride. We really, Thea had this great understanding of how much photographers needed a guidebook, essentially an opportunity for conversation around it. And we had done this whirlwind self-publishing tour to get this book off the ground, knowing that the time was right. It was 2013 coming up, and you know, we knew that there might potentially be a Supreme Court decision coming, which in fact there was in 2013. And we, I mean, in about 6 months' time, got that book produced, which I look back now, and I'm not even sure how we did it, particularly as working parents. It was pretty crazy. But we had a great response to it, and before we really had even gotten to what we considered our national book party, at which we were holding at a Human Rights Campaign in Washington, D.C. in April, we were contacted by an agent through Amphoto Books, which is a brand under Crown Publishing, Random House. And it was like a dream come true. You know, we sort of had hoped that people would understand that this mattered, and they picked it up, and we went back to work rewriting it, expanding it, and came up with the current book, The New Art of Capturing Love, which is, I find, and I'm biased, that it's quite breathtaking, and that is in large thanks due to the 48 photographers and 72 couples who shared their work and their celebrations with us. And the feedback that we've gotten from it, originally from like other wedding professionals, friends and family, the couples themselves, and photographers, the response has been incredibly exciting, because it has been received as we intended it, which would be a book that really gives people looking for more information access to understand thinking about couples and posing them outside of the limitations of gender roles, outside of the limitations of some wedding traditions. And, you know, it's one of these things that a lot of the feedback we've gotten, particularly from many folks in the LGBTQ community, is that this all sort of seems so obvious, and yet it's that sort of obvious information that actually the light bulbs haven't gone off for people. So it's been really fun to watch people look at some of the concepts or some of the pictures and totally get it.
I love it. The New Art of Capturing Love, listeners, you can buy it where fine books are sold. Let's dive into talking about weddings and really get under the surface here. First of all, should I even be saying the phrase gay weddings? I mean, I know it's your domain name, so obviously we want to put that out there. But how do we feel even generally about saying, oh, yeah, let's talk about gay weddings?
Yeah. So the overwhelming majority of LGBT couples, they will say what they prefer, and what matters most for us is that it is called a wedding.
Right.
And so I generally sort of break this down and thinking about it relative to, you know, what are we talking about it from an equality standpoint? And the sort of semantics of equality. But by the same token, there are also other interesting nuances around, for example, SEO searching, or around how we might narrow what we're looking for or what expertise one might have. So I have said to wedding professionals for quite some time, look, LGBT couples are looking for you everywhere. So it's not just about, you know, advertising on a niche site, and that's the only place that we go. In fact, you're going to find that most couples want to find, like even any straight couple, they want to find wedding professionals and inspirational resources that feel like they look like them, that
right.
It's the same style, it's the same energy, it's the same humor and sensibility. But there is a level which is, and it still it never ceases to surprise me, that I hear as many stories I do about couples who have bad experiences calling wedding professionals, or they are afraid of what might happen. And so using a term like same-sex wedding or gay wedding or lesbian wedding is actually one healthy and helpful way, for example, that people might find someone or might find content that's a better match. So it's, I think we're really in an evolutionary period as we work through it, because the mainstream industry still has some work to do to catch up on the inclusion front. And so until I feel like any same-sex couple, for example, could go to the average site and feel that they are being reflected there and the nuance of their needs are being met, there still is some usefulness to it. But the best practice would be, you know, if you're talking about your wedding, it is. It's a wedding. You're getting married. You're not getting gay married.
Right.
But let's be honest. I mean, this is a show called The Show Is So Gay, and some of us like to have a little bit of fun with that.
I do.
So I like to hope there will be a little bit of camp left out there for us as we assimilate. But it's one of those things that it's language, and I say to wedding professionals, this is why you need to work on your cultural competence, because there are nuances with every word used, and it is evolving, and you need to be comfortable with that so that you're able to better serve your customers and to convince them that you're really ready for them.
Which is not to say that there aren't some differences. I was checking out this report over at WeddingWire.com that you sent me, and I learned so much. Let me hit some of these bullets and get your reactions.
Sure.
One bullet, the average age of a same-sex couple skews slightly older than the national average. Females on average are 32 years of age and males are 37. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. This is one of these things that because we're a smaller portion of any survey, we end up really not, you know, moving any survey along enough. But now that we have more couples getting married, we're able to take a look at more data, and WeddingWire has been a phenomenal partner in this. We're really able to get a good snapshot of what is happening and then to lay that in terms of understanding what's happening as our celebrations, legal and otherwise, evolve, and particularly as that's impacted by our legal opportunity. So to me, that's not so surprising because, you know, there were a lot of couples who were either waiting for marriage to come to their state, so there were 13 states, you know, waiting for that switch to be flipped in 2015 with the Supreme Court ruling, but there were also a lot of couples who'd been together for a long time. They were holding out on doing anything, or they were waiting for that federal recognition, and for whatever reason, finally got to that point of being willing to go ahead and take advantage of this legal opportunity that hadn't otherwise been available to us. So I think, as I say to folks, you know, in terms of looking ahead, we're going to see those numbers begin to drop and track more closely to the overall numbers. And I think any 2015 number is going to end up really being skewed in some categories that might look unusual because it was such a celebratory year for us and because there were couples who had been waiting for it. And, you know, I think when I have, this is anecdotal, but when I have talked to my gay male friends, particularly those who are my age or older, that there is a lot more hesitance and nervousness about being really public in going forward, whether it's having just a ceremony or getting the legal marriage license. And I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this, Ken, through the community that that you connect with, particularly gay men. But, you know, it's just not, still not easy. Homophobia is still out there. I think women have it easier than men still generally. And I find that because men still find they have to be somewhat protective of themselves because of the homophobia, that it takes a lot more for them to be ready to do it. And there are plenty, certainly, of LGBT folks who came out in the time when it was a lot of, like, protesting, and this was a very political thing, and it was very hardcore. And the last thing that members of our community who've been down that road want to be doing is joining an institution that is largely seen as so incredibly heteronormative and so incredibly heterosexist in every bit of it.
I think you're right on. And I think with that hesitation, that absolutely exists. I've actually been thinking a lot lately about the other side of that too. I have two friends, one straight, one gay male, who got engaged. Both of them got engaged after an extraordinarily short amount of time. And both of them posted on Facebook, you know, changed their status to got engaged. And the reactions have been markedly different. With the straight couple, it was, yay, you found true love, how fantastic. And with the gay couple, I felt like it was much more eye-rolling and seen as, okay, this is just a little bit more flaky and not taken as seriously. And I think the gay couple was maybe even together a few days longer. We're talking about days here. A few days longer than the straight couple. But I felt like the reactions were markedly different for the two, mostly because it looked kind of faddish. It still looks slightly faddish for the gay couple to get engaged because I think it's still not indoctrinated into society yet.
Interesting.
That's my take. That's
really interesting.
That's my take.
Yeah. Well, here's the way I look at this. This is going to be a really interesting ride for the next few years, and we are doing our best to pull together as much data as we can to say, here are some really finite things that we can say that we're seeing some changes that are happening, but we're going to see a lot of change in the next couple of years, and one of those things is age getting younger. We're going to see the trajectory looking much more like, you know, how straight people always did, right, where you get engaged, then you get married, rather than this sort of whatever works for us set up relative to when we came out and where it's legal. It's just going to start to streamline a little more. And so I don't know how quickly that will happen, but I suspect it's going to happen relatively quickly with our millennials particularly. I mean, they've just grown up in a different world.
Another bullet that intrigued me, although 82% of heterosexual brides change their last names to their partners, only 43% of same-sex couples take the other's name. I would assume then that we should be recommending soy-based inks, because otherwise these invitations are going to really damage the environment because there's so much more writing. Is that correct?
You know, this is one of the things that is really interesting to me, and this is one example of many, that when you break it down these days, the structural planning of weddings for same-sex couples relative to opposite-sex couples looks structurally more the same than ever. So we're seeing closer tracking in terms of guest size, in terms of spend, all of that. But there are a lot of big differences that remain. Because I get in trouble all the time. People don't like for me to say that same-sex weddings can be different. Everyone wants to say they're the same. And my point is, actually, they're not. And there are some nuanced things to think about, not only for the couple as they go through the planning, but for professionals trying to help them. And this name change thing is, I think, a great example, which is much more about where there are all these gender norms and rules around what people do. And for us, we start from a place of what's best for us. And anecdotally speaking, what I see is when same-sex couples tend to combine or invent a new name or someone changes a name, it's when a child comes into the picture, because they want a family identity at that point, as opposed to, I'm good with my name.
Nice.
Or I don't like yours.
Nice. Again, listeners, we're here with wedding innovator, author, education expert, Catherine Hamm. Catherine, do you see your work just markedly different? You've certainly referenced it, but is your work markedly different pre and post Supreme Court decision?
That's a great question. You know, I think in some ways, I have been doing this work already for the past few years in terms of educating. The biggest change I've probably seen is this whole legal landscape education piece I did for wedding professionals. I got to just take that out of my presentation altogether because I was trying to help wedding professionals understand how the law impacted choices we were making.
Right.
And so there are things like that that clarify that. I would say I probably do more work trying to underscore the dangers of assimilation and the importance of not oversimplifying if you're interested in taking the best care you can of LGBT couples. You know, relative to other big changes that we're seeing is much more traditional planning and fewer legal elopements. There are a couple of folks I've spoken with who are based out of the New York area, and both of them told me that they saw this incredibly dramatic drop in their business because they were doing so many legal elopements in Manhattan, New York area, and it just literally, like, the pipe was just turned off because the legal changes meant that couples were shifting to new routines. So there are little things like that, but relative to, you know, what I do, I continue to do a lot of work as sort of an analyst and thinker in the space. Since we have marriage equality, which was a big thing I was always talking about, I've shifted to be talking a little bit more about challenging bridal bias and recognizing the ways in which the sort of heteronormative nature of our industry is eliminating a number of folks, including straight men, because grooms are really seen as props to brides, quite largely. And there are ways that in our language we talk about bride and bridal all the time. And, you know, it's the modern market, and we need to be much more inclusive of today's couples instead of yesterday's brides. That's the reality.
You have this hashtag bridal rebrand. Talk about those efforts you just started there and how that's being received. And I would also imagine a lot of barriers there.
Yeah, you know, it is. When I thought about doing this, and it was sort of, I was thinking just about what are my New Year's resolutions? And we had just sold the company, GayWeddings.com, to WeddingWire. They acquired us in 2015. And so it meant that I didn't have to be in the day-to-day work as much, that we could use this larger team effort. And with marriage equality happening, it meant I needed to be asking myself, you know, what's next? And this is where I realized, you know, one of the things that is really important, but is work left undone, is this component of, again, if you know, you hear people talk about bridal shows, that's, they just say bridal show, and people do it on automatic pilot. It's completely understandable. But I started to, and again, these are things I had been thinking about previously, but I put it together in this package of thinking about, could we end up convincing, I'm using my little air quotes right now, bridal show producers to rethink some of their branding and language to be more inclusive, because I know that in practice they welcome same-sex couples to their expos, But so what is the difference in what you can do in terms of the kind of welcome mat that you put out there? And again, that's for straight men who I believe increasingly are invited to and want to be more involved in their ceremonies, as well as, not to mention, for gay men who are now have legal access and they do not have the social culturalization, if you will, growing up as young men in our very female-centric bridal wedding story. And so how do we serve them and how do we continue to grow what's happening by challenging our assumptions? So for me, that's the, as I said, air quotes, bridal show producers. But the other thing I realized is that a lot of this work needs to be done with journalists. Wedding Wire is an exceptional partner. They actually, on their first time out, where they have just grown with an acquisition of BODOS and have gone global, and they were big enough to apply for Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index, and I'm proud to say they got a perfect 100% score in 2015, their first attempt, which says these folks are walking the walk, and I'm so proud of them for that. So for us, we have for any number of years now, Wedding Wire as a brand talks about engaged couples and brides and grooms, and that is the language. And the tools are accessible to everyone, although there are still a lot of places where you have to go through some, for example, a little more straight imagery, or there may be some other things that same-sex couples have to look a little more deeply to build for themselves, which, you know, we're all working on. But the trouble for me would be we are all on message, and then there were a couple of media placements they got, and the reporter would talk about the client, Wedding Wire's clients, as brides. And I thought, wait a minute, they just told you brides and grooms, engaged couples, everything we say is inclusive of everyone. And all of that work gets undone in a reporter's response.
Yeah.
So it's been really fun to reach out to a few folks, various editors, and talking with some journalists and trying to help them recognize this. And I will say that it has not only been interesting to me that the gay men I've polled have been shocked to realize how the ways in which they're excluded from the industry because they just haven't thought about it. So again, one of those obvious things that just the light bulb hasn't gone off. People can't see it because it's just automatic pilot. And the other thing is that some of the journalists that I've spoken with find it very intriguing and also haven't thought of it before and are trying to figure out, well, how would we go about doing that? How would we define that as a new best practice? So my hope is that we shed a little more light on that and we help people rethink their language. So if you've got a shop that is a bridal shop and you offer gowns for women, rock on. Like, you don't need to change a thing. But if you're using the word bridal in your business title, then, or if you are using the word bride in an article and you are referencing the wedding client, then you're behind the times and you're not speaking to the entire market, if you will, all the couples that are eligible for your services.
And this isn't just about sensitivity and empowerment. This is really about doing good business, too. It will help your business if you catch up.
Absolutely. And, you know, and frankly, because, well, obviously I appreciate strong business practices and strategic thinking, back to that thread of social justice always running for me, this is as a lesbian, as a member of the LGBT community who has had the great privilege and pleasure of designing one non-legal, one legal, but that represents our relationship and our life together and our commitment. It's a very authentic, organic, ritual experience. My feeling is like that is how you start relationships on the right foot. And so if, you know, and I say this, last time I checked, right, this is about two people exchanging vows. So why would we then have a gigantic, enormous event that costs thousands and thousands of dollars for most couples and have it be that it's only about one person? Why does this other person not count?
Yeah.
To me, like, that's a matter of equality. So, yes, to business practice, but there is something for me that, as I like to say, I can't believe I'm this married lesbian and a same-sex wedding expert, and I spend a lot of time talking about straight grooms.
Yeah.
But frankly, it's their day too, and I don't think it's fair for them to be neglected.
I want to be a married lesbian. It just struck me when you said that. I want to be one too. I would imagine that one of the perks of your work is that you get to encounter all of these really cool ideas that people are doing out there to get engaged and maybe as part of their weddings as well. Can you share some things with us? What's something that someone has done to become engaged that struck you as, wow, that was pretty cool?
Well, you know, so many of those are out there in social media now, you know, folks doing this sort of public engagement and the sort of pop wedding, and everyone either doing a really cool, interesting legal elopement, or where it's an engagement that involves other people and involves photography or videography. So there's certainly plenty of that going on. WeddingWire actually did this really cool campaign inviting people to share their engagement stories, and there's one that's out there floating around where they had two women, and one was surprising her partner, her fiancé, with an engagement, and this is so incredible. So she's first talking about her story of having lost her first wife to cancer. So I thought, wow, here we are where this has been around long enough that there are people who could have been legally married for a time and lost a beloved, begun to work through recovering through that, and then fallen in love again. And so she's telling the story about how healing this relationship has been, and she's really excited to propose to her girlfriend. And so she applies for this contest, and they stage it, they set it all up, and it turns out there is a best friend in the mix who is aware that this is happening, and she knows that the fiancé also wants to propose. So in the end, she brings a ring along surreptitiously, and the, you know, planned proposal happens, and as it's happening, and after the proposal takes place, she hands the ring to her friend and is like, and no one knew this was about to happen. And so then the other partner then turns around and does a proposal, has the ring on the spot. And to me, that's one of the things that's really interesting about how these sort of engagements and planning experiences begin, with how same-sex couples are often doing this from a very mutual place. And there is that question, which is, you know, do we go the traditional route of one person proposes, and if so, what does that look like? And then, or is this something that we work on together and figure out, or we somehow spontaneously are coming to it at the same time in a race for who can propose first? So to me, that is one of the really interesting things. And, you know, as far as ceremonies go, it's, I think couples do all sorts of really fun things, and I think same-sex couples in particular do some great stuff playing with attire. We are one of the biggest differences between straight and LGBT couples is that we blend our wedding parties. So we mix by gender, we mix by attire, and we gender bend and just do really creative, make creative choices that really showcase the personalities of the couples and their friends. And then that might include, you know, anything from the sort of favors they offer to, you know, table cards. It's just as highly personalized and meaningful production, if you will. And I was just struck. I saw a new guide that WeddingWire has just put out in understanding today's couples. And the theme over and over again is how personalized today's couples want their ceremonies to be. You know, I think that is a huge LGBT influence on the market, without question.
Yeah.
Because people come to our ceremonies and see this different way to do it, and then come up with these ideas and recognize, you know what, I am going to do this how I want to do it, and something that's fun for us, because this is who we are.
Right.
I think that's the coolest thing to happen to the wedding industry.
You could also do like I did with the engagements, and just let your boyfriend know you will be proposing, not me.
Hey, clarity is always helpful.
Yeah, but then I can't get impatient. That's part of the problem.
That's exactly right.
I would imagine that part and partial to this work, and thankfully you have a background in this, there has to be some sort of counseling going on too, because we're talking about relationships. We're obviously not just talking about merchandise, and we're not talking about producing an event, but we are essentially talking about relationships, and so there's a lot of emotions, I think, that probably come along with that, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, so I'll speak in a second about my own personal style and habits around that as informed by my background. But I would say that is one of the things that when, if there are any engaged couples listening, straight or gay, I would say to spend time as you meet wedding professionals to kind of get a sense of their energy, their style, because there are some wedding professionals out there that really do understand the joy, the opportunity, the emotionality of the experience, and they really do become very emotionally engaged in the process. And I think those are some of the finest wedding pros out there. And there are certainly wedding professionals that are, this is just, you know, doing business, and they're very good at what they do, but they aren't going to, you know, want to come to, you know, whatever your next party is that you're having and become personal friends. And I have seen both. And I think for couples that really want that extra emotional support through the planning process, which is important, I think, for LGBT couples right now as we continue to find our way, I would say look for those folks. I mean, again, you don't want somebody that's, you know, enabling a situation or is emotionally involved. For me personally, I have a background in social work and education. When I meet with couples one-on-one, I spend most of my time trying to figure out if they're on the same page. You know, beyond having a budget, which is really helpful to guide, I find that there are couples that don't really have, I always have called it the non-negotiable. Like, are you clear on what it is that you know you really want? And does your partner know that? And then does that line up with the practical reality of what you want to do? So if someone is like, I want an outdoor wedding in June on a Saturday night in the city, that may not work with the other person's non-negotiable, which is we only have a budget of $5,000 for this event.
Yeah.
And so part of that work is helping people with the communication and moving through that. And frankly, a wedding planning experience done well is a wonderful way to start a lifelong relationship together at that higher level, because it involves money, it involves all sorts of, well, family tradition, emotional intensity, sometimes a lot of grief, sometimes a lot of joy. It can sometimes be messy. And, you know, sometimes there are couples that don't talk about that before they get ready to get hitched. And so the upside of wedding planning is, if you haven't already done that really important work, it's going to show up in your wedding planning. And I would encourage everyone to spend some time paying attention to that, because it will serve you in the long run.
I still want to do, I don't know if people still do this, I still want to do the Star Jones model, where all of the things get donated because you really advertise them in a tacky way at your wedding. Is that still a thing?
In other words, the same six couples out there looking to be sponsored for their weddings?
I want that.
Is that what you're saying? You know, there are some, there was a period, I have to say, because there were a few, I thought that was very cagey and smart, some same-sex couples doing that, because what they realized was there were a lot of wedding pros out there, like, willing to give away whatever because they were looking to build their portfolio, and some of them were not as, I think, they weren't coming from what I felt like was the best of places. I thought that was like a perfect turnabout as fair play. So you can go for it. I think there may be wedding professionals that are like, yeah, no, but give it a whirl. And I'd say really do it up if
yeah.
you're going to do it.
I feel like if I'm going to be tacky, go all in.
That's exactly right. Oh, listen, for this show is so gay. This is my fear with assimilation. Where is the camp? Where is the good time? Where is doing it in a way where, you know, you can have a really snap, great gay wedding? I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of fun to be had in that, and that's a lot of the community that I came out in. And, you know, I'm happy that we are accepted in the mainstream, but I do miss those days.
Well, let me just hit that last word that you said. I love the word community. And I mm-hmm. think that as we're talking about a wedding of someone in our community, that's always been an obsession of mine, of mm-hmm. when I have this ceremony, hopefully soon, but I can't rush it because I told him he has to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That I wanted people to be involved. I didn't want it to just be about the two of us, because we still are at the point, I feel, and you tell me if you disagree, where it still is about all of us.
Mm-hmm. I think yes, but, you know, there are just ways in which, you know, my thinking back on when I was coming out, like the places we knew to go find each other were in bars and bookstores.
Right.
Now, I've gotten older, so I don't know really. I mean, like, I had a crisis a couple years ago when I had to go to Pride, and I was like, I don't know what to wear to Pride. What do you wear to Pride today? I don't know. I've been living in the suburbs as a parent, so I just feel really out of touch with it. And I feel like we should still, every minute of every day, be grateful for this opportunity that we have, because there are still people that are fighting for it not to be there. But by the same token, there is a level of where this is really accepted, and there is loss that comes with this feeling of community like it used to be, in terms of why we needed each other so desperately.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't necessarily have our families, we didn't necessarily have our colleagues, and so community and chosen family serve this a really big purpose in our lives as a, you know, a subculture, really.
Yeah.
And now the upside is we're just integrated. And so our communities are more in line with the sort of, is it, you know, your work colleagues, your friends from school, your family and your extended cousins, and then, you know, your partner's friends and family, that it is, it's a different kind of community. And I think it's one that's more integrated. I will say, I don't know about you, but when we go to weddings, we still usually find that there is a gay table, and we're usually seated at it, and we know we are the most fun table at the whole wedding.
Without question.
I'd say, like, that's an interesting question I have about for people about, is that still happening? So I guess we still have that little community identity.
Yeah, absolutely. Listeners, this is what you all must do. You need to stroll on over to gayweddings.com. There's so much happening over there. You need to stroll on over to weddingwire.com. You must purchase, I mandate it, it's in my hands right this very second, you must purchase The New Art of Capturing Love, The Essential Guide to Lesbian and Gay Wedding Photography. It is the very definition of a stunning coffee table book, but also one that is just so stimulating on so many levels. I've had so many conversations with people just by having this book out, and it's really triggered some beautiful moments. So there's that. I want to quote you for a second, Catherine. Back in 2011, you wrote this in a Huffington Post piece. You wrote, quote, "Bottom line, a wedding should be a time when you can count on celebrating your relationship with those you love most in the world and those who love and support you. Make it special and make it count, and don't be afraid to buck with tradition to build an unforgettable celebration with meaningful memories to last you and your partner a lifetime." It's really a beautiful thing, and this is what you and your mom and everybody you've been working with have been doing for so long, and my hope is that you know what a difference it has made in this world.
Oh, thank you, Ken. That's great. It is, the good news is it is the light of many shining along for every couple that stands up and proclaims their love. I mean, how powerful is that? We need so much more in this world. So here's to everyone out there that is engaged. Here's to you. I hope you get engaged soon, or at least when the time is right. And you need to have me back on so we can spend some time talking through the wedding planning.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this wedding planning will be recorded and broadcast on this show. It's so gay. That's what we're doing. Catherine, can we please not let another 3 years go by?
You got it. Anytime.
Catherine, thank you so much. All the best to your mom, and please keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Kim.
Go into the chapel and we're gonna get married. Go into the chapel and we're gonna get married.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have some time left on this week's episode to get to all the latest LGBTQ news out there. So let's get started. The big news this week was with the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court this week summarily reversed an Alabama court decision that had refused to recognize a same-sex parent adoption from another state. This is so big. Let me detail it for you. The case concerns a former same-sex couple identified in court documents as VL and EL who were raising three children together in Alabama after using donor insemination. VL, the non-biological mother, adopted the couple's children in Georgia in 2007 with EL's consent. When the couple broke up, EL stopped VL from visiting the children and argued that the Georgia adoption was invalid. The Alabama Supreme Court voided the adoption. They actually voided the adoption, saying it should not have been granted. VL sued, arguing that under the Constitution's full faith and credit clause, states are required to respect court judgments issued in other states. The Supreme Court this week agreed with the non-biological mother and reversed the Alabama Supreme Court decision that had invalidated the Georgia adoption decree of her children. Lawyers for VL praised the Supreme Court's decision. Had the court gone the other way, they feared it could call into question the parental rights of other adoptive parents who traveled or moved to Alabama. The National Center for Lesbian Rights Family Law Director Kathy Sakamura said this, quote, "The Supreme Court's reversal of Alabama's unprecedented decision to void an adoption from another state is a victory not only for our client, but for thousands of adopted families. No adoptive parent or child should have to face the uncertainty and loss of being separated years after their adoption just because another state's court disagrees with the law that was applied in their adoption." VL released her own statement saying she was overjoyed with the decision. She said this, quote, "I have been my children's mother in every way for their whole lives. I thought that adopting them meant that we would be able to be together always. When the Alabama court said my adoption was invalid and I wasn't their mother, I didn't think I could go on. The Supreme Court has done what's right for my family." huge, huge news. And this wasn't a split decision. Obviously, we're down to eight justices, so this could have been 4-4, but it was unanimous. And the court said this, quote, "The Constitution provides that the full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. That clause requires each state to recognize and give effect to valid judgments rendered by the courts of its sister states." This is really big. This is really big. You know, there's a part of me that's a little bit hesitant. Let's celebrate. Let's celebrate. Our rights weren't invalidated, but we still are at that point where a lot of these cases haven't been tried. It hasn't been that long that we in the LGBTQ community have been able to adopt and do that second parent adoption. So a lot of these challenges are only now starting to come up. So to have the Supreme Court validate that we have these rights that we haven't had for very long, is a very big deal. It sets a precedent, and this is an area where we really need a precedent set. So that's the good news. In some not great news, over in Missouri, I hope that you guys all heard about this. There was a 39-hour filibuster. A 39-hour filibuster. It ended on Wednesday morning. Republicans in the state Senate voted to pass an anti-gay constitutional amendment that claims to defend, quote, religious freedom. And they were able to stop that 39-hour filibuster by Democrats. The marathon discussion began around 4 p.m. on Monday. At 39 hours, it topped the longest filibuster on record, which was 38 hours long over 6 days. That was about abortion in 1999. The bill in question was known as Senate Joint Resolution 39. It asks Missouri voters to amend the state constitution to protect certain religious organizations and individuals from being penalized by the state because of their sincere religious beliefs or practices concerning marriage between two persons of the same sex. It passed 21-11 after Republican lawmakers broke the filibuster. Republican sponsors of the legislation contend that it and other so-called religious freedom laws introduced around the country they're not discriminatory. The Republican sponsors say they're not discriminatory. They say they're necessary. They're necessary to protect the free expression of those who oppose marriage equality. Republican Senator Bob Onder said this, quote, "We are fighting for fairness and the right for people to freely live out their faith while not infringing on the rights of others. This is not about discrimination. It's about liberty." And that's what Republicans say when they are trying to couch discrimination in terms of liberty. Not good, folks. Not good. And we're going to see these bills all over the place. There in Missouri, the amendment must be voted on by the GOP-controlled state Senate one more time before it makes it to the Missouri House. If it makes it through the Republican-led House, the Missouri voters would consider it in either the August primary or the November general election. The Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton, who won the Mississippi primary this week but lost the Michigan primary to Bernie Sanders, had tweeted her support to the Democrats filibustering the bill in Missouri. Hillary Clinton tweeted this, quote, "Marriage equality is the law. I stand with those filibustering in Missouri to make sure discrimination won't be." Then Bernie Sanders tweeted, he said, "Standing up for our LGBTQ sisters and brothers is the duty of all elected officials. This should make us all proud." Jeffrey Mittman, the executive director of the ACLU of Missouri, called it an outrage that Republicans had shut down debate. He said that the legislation would enshrine discrimination in our state constitution, and it means that LGBT people could be turned away by adoption. There it is right there. They could be turned away by adoption and foster care agencies or at homeless shelters. Activists say businesses could refuse service to LGBT people by citing their religious beliefs. Jeffrey Mittman went on to say this, quote, "This amendment raises serious constitutional concerns because it singles out same-sex couples for discrimination. The state cannot constitutionally prefer one set of religious beliefs over all other beliefs." So that's what's going on in Missouri. But get ready for it, folks, because it really is going to pop up all over the place. All over the place, state to state to state. Sticking on the national front, mentioned Hillary Clinton, mentioned Bernie Sanders. Let's talk about the Republican side. Texas Senator and Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz says that he is thrilled He's thrilled to get an endorsement from an anti-gay lawmaker in Michigan who wants to criminalize homosexuality. Cruz's campaign this week announced his endorsement by a Michigan congressman and 8 current and former state legislators. Most of them have anti-LGBT records, but the one who stands out among them is State Representative Gary Glenn. Let's talk about Glenn for a second. Before Glenn was elected to the legislature in 2014, he was president of the Michigan affiliate of the American Family Association, which always sounds like such a happy organization, but is indeed an anti-gay hate group. When he was affiliated there with the American Family Association, he called for the criminalization of homosexuality. In 2010, when Representative Glenn was with the American Family Association, he told the now defunct Michigan Messenger newspaper that he supported the recriminalization of homosexuality in the U.S. after Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council appeared on Hardball making a case for criminalization. He said this, Representative Glenn said this, quote, "The short answer to your question is yes. We believe that states should be free to regulate and prohibit behavior that's a violation of community standards." Not sure who it is that determines community standards, but they should be able to prohibit behavior that's a violation of community standards and a proven threat to public health and safety, including, as most of the United States did throughout its history, homosexual behavior. Representative Glenn also appeared in an anti-gay documentary film claiming that schools should be held liable if they tell a student it's okay to be gay. He said this in the film. The film was called Light Wins, How to Overcome the Criminalization of Christianity. It was just released last year, and he's quoted as saying this, quote, "If some young person hears at school that it's okay to be gay and then comes down with a fatal disease as a result, school officials should be held legally liable individually and in their official capacities, financially and maybe even criminally." Wow. So he then endorsed Ted Cruz, and Ted Cruz said this, quote, "I am thrilled." He's thrilled. "I am thrilled to announce the addition of such outstanding conservative legislators to our Michigan leadership team. These courageous conservatives are coalescing behind our campaign because the people of Michigan are tired of career politicians in Washington and want someone who has a record of fighting for our values and the Constitution." Apparently, any endorsement is a good endorsement for Ted Cruz, but honestly, this is pretty much in line with everything that Ted Cruz is about. I hope that people are focusing their attention on Ted Cruz. I know that a lot of the focus is on Donald Trump, and certainly my focus has been there as well. Since our last episode, I've written 2 Huffington Post pieces, one last week, and you can just look all these up. If you go to theshowisogay.com, you can click on the little Huffington Post icon, and it takes you to all the pieces I've written for them. But last week was my first time writing a piece for the politics section, and I wrote a piece reminding Republicans that children are indeed listening to their words. In that piece, I actually talked to my niece, my 12-year-old niece, who said, yeah, no, I would get detention if I talked to other students like that. If I talked to my peers like that, I would get detention. But this is what they have to witness there on the television. And then this week, I likened Donald Trump to Lord Voldemort. I did it. I posed the question, hey, what if Donald Trump really is Voldemort? So I know a lot of the attention is on Donald Trump, but I hope people are focusing as much attention on Ted Cruz because he's anti-gay. Let's just put it out there. Ted Cruz, totally anti-gay. This would not be a great thing for us. So I am a nonpartisan show. Okay, I'm not. But if you care about LGBT rights, your choice is pretty clear. It's just putting that out there. Another interesting case out there, would love to get your take on this. Send me an email if you have a response to this story. Send it on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. In Wisconsin, after progressive groups publicized anti-gay opinion pieces she had written for a student newspaper in 1992, Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley has apologized and said the pieces are not reflective of her worldview. Bradley, then known as Rebecca Grassi, called gay people degenerates, and she called homosexuality an abnormal sexual preference. She said this in a column and in letters to the editor published by Marquette University's Tribune. One Wisconsin Now and People for the American Way distributed copies of Bradley's writings at a press conference this week at the state capitol in Madison, 4 weeks before the state Supreme Court election. Governor Scott Walker appointed Bradley to the high court last October to finish the term of a justice who had passed away. Bradley now must stand for election on April 5th. Wisconsin elects Supreme Court justices to staggered 10-year terms. Wow, I didn't know that. They get elected to 10-year terms there as Supreme Court justices in Wisconsin. These two groups called on Bradley to resign because of statements that included the following. This is her own writing. She said this, quote, "Perhaps AIDS Awareness," which was a campus group where she was, "perhaps AIDS Awareness should seek to educate us with their misdirected compassion for the degenerates who basically commit suicide through their behavior." She said this, "The homosexuals and drug addicts who do essentially kill themselves and others through their own behavior deservedly receive none of my sympathy." She said this, "Why is a student government on a Catholic campus attempting to bring legitimacy to an abnormal sexual preference?" She said this, "One will be better off contracting AIDS than developing cancer because those afflicted with the politically correct disease will be getting all of the funding. How sad that the lives of degenerate drug addicts and queers are valued more than the innocent victims of more prevalent ailments." And one more, she said this, quote, "And on the election of President Bill Clinton, we now have elected a tree-hugging, baby-killing, pot-smoking, flag-burning, queer-loving, bull-spouting, 60s radical socialist adulterer to the highest office in our nation. We've just had an election which proves the majority of voters are either totally stupid or entirely evil." So she wrote all of those things. Now, her campaign manager called the demand that she resign absurd. The justice declined to speak to the paper, but she issued a written statement saying she was embarrassed by what she wrote as a very young student upset about the outcome of that presidential election. She said, quote, "To those offended by comments I made as a young college student, I apologize and assure you that those comments are not reflective of my worldview. These comments have nothing to do with who I am as a person or a jurist, and they have nothing to do with the issues facing the voters of this state." She added that the release of her 1992 writings is now a, quote, "blatant mudslinging campaign." So I'm a little bit torn on this one. I'll be very upfront with you. I'm a little bit torn on this one because, first of all, we're talking about 24 years ago. And that doesn't excuse her behavior, but we're not talking about Representative Glenn, who said those horrible comments in Michigan, you know, last year. We're talking about 24 years ago, and she's stepping up to say, well, look, I wish she had stepped up to say, I was wrong. I shouldn't have said those things. She pretty much says, I was a young college student. She certainly apologized, and she said that they don't reflect her worldview. I wish she had said, but I was wrong. I shouldn't have said those things. Also, I was wrong. So I'm a little bit torn. I give her a little bit of credit for stepping forward and saying, these are not my views anymore, but she still did say those things, and the apology felt a little half-cocked. A little bit half-cocked. What do you think about that? Send me an email at ken@theshowisogay.com. And we'll feature your comment on next week's show. That's what we do here. There is a great op-ed, a great op-ed over on theadvocate.com. It's called "The LGBT Movement is in Chaos." You must go check it out. You must go check it out. Just stroll on over to theadvocate.com, type in "The LGBT Movement is in Chaos," and it's going to give you quite a snapshot about where we are right now. And where we are right now is in a place of conflict in the LGBT community. There's still so much work to do, and we're not in the same place. We're not all in agreement on how to approach this work. First of all, you have all the people who have completely dropped off the face of the earth because marriage equality has been achieved. And so complacency is in full effect. And then you have all the drama with the Human Rights Campaign and all the drama with the task force. And GLAAD, I didn't revisit this story. GLAAD was in some hot water a few weeks ago. Maybe it was about a month and a half ago because they took away their Best Blogger Award. They have indeed reinstated that award, and they did it retroactively. They're going to be including that on this year. But certainly the overall narrative there was a lot of these national organizations being quite out of touch with grassroots movements. But yeah, we're not on the same page. We're not sure which direction to go in. And this piece over on advocate.com, I'll try to get the author on next week's show, "The LGBT Movement is in Chaos," an amazing piece that really sums things up. We have time for one more story. It's kind of a happy one. The Catholic Church in Michigan. That's right, I said the Catholic Church in Michigan will now extend health benefits to the partners and spouses of its gay employees. The Michigan Church says it's not going against Catholic doctrine opposing gay marriage. The church will simply extend benefits to the legal domestic partners of any employee if that person is over 18, financially interdependent with the employees, and has lived with them for 6 months or more. That partner could be a friend, cousin, sibling, or parent, as well as a lover or spouse, the church noted, adding that calling the new policy a concession to gay couples couples was a narrow reading, except some people are saying, hey, this is a bit of a concession to gay couples. This isn't this overwhelming gesture that signals that the Catholic Church has changed, but I will say it is something. It's not nothing. And often when we're talking about the Catholic Church, we're not often talking about something, a gesture in the direction of the LGBTQ community. So I'm going with the very academically parsed out phrase, this is something, and I'm going to end on that positive note. Our huge, huge thanks to Catherine Hamm. She is just such a treat. Go check out all of her stuff out there. And our thanks to you all for listening. Get out there and go use your voice the best way you know how to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters. And while you're out there using your voice, while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?